1970s, there was an experiment that was done in the realm of social psychology that I think changed much of psychology today. Amazing, amazing experiment done by Dr. Philip Zimbardo. Most of you probably heard of it, done at Stanford University. 75 people came out, they all agreed to participate in this experiment. And the purpose of the experiment was to see what are the psychological effects of being a prison guard and what are the psychological effects of being a prisoner. And so 25 subjects were chosen randomly in the middle of the night. Those people that were chosen to be the prisoners. Real police cars came to their homes, got them out of bed, handcuffed them, put them inside cars. And the people that were supposed to be guards got the uniforms, got clubs. What's amazing about this experiment, even though everybody knew it was an experiment, that's all it was just a study, is that within 3 days, and that's all it took, the experiment was so successful that the guards verbally and physically abused the prisoners. Mamish, and that the prisoners themselves began to act in a very savage-like manner. Began to plan escape routes. Began to break things the way that they spoke to other people. 6 days into this experiment, the experiment was shut down. One of the problems was that this guy, Dr. Zimbardo himself, he played the part of superintendent. The whole experiment was so good, he was getting into it so much, he allowed people to get physically hurt. There was blood, people were screaming from pain, people being tortured. And he allowed it. 6 days, the entire experiment closed down. It was one of the most unethical studies ever done in psychology, but it was a great study. Just goes to show you the power of the situation. Zimbardo wrote out an entire book that anyone going into the field of psychology needs to read. And his whole theory is that we act, our behavior is based on what's called situational attribution. Based on the situation that is surrounding us, that is how we react. And obviously the machlokes for that is something called predispositional attribution, which means that we act based on what's inside of us, not what's outside of us. A couple of days ago, we're trying to clean out for Pesach in my house. And I see a book written by Viktor Frankl, Man Searching for Meaning. Great book. If you haven't had a chance to read it, I would highly advise it. And I'm going through the first few pages. And I'm totally focused on one of the paragraphs that he quotes. He says, when he comes into the camp, and most of you know that Viktor Frankl is also a psychiatrist. He wrote a lot about the psychology of the camps. And this was the first writing that he did after he was freed from the camps. And he writes, on the first day that he came to the camps, he was shocked. He was overwhelmed. He was traumatized by the amount of violence that took place. He said, he's talking about, he gets off the train and he remembers SS screaming at them and the dogs, and he couldn't maintain any part of his personal belongings. In 3 weeks' time, he writes in the same paragraph, in 3 weeks' time he's eating some watery soup and the guy next to him is being killed by an SS officer and he's totally oblivious. Comments in his book that it didn't take a long time for people to transition to the situation that they were in. And while I only quoted you two studies that probably most of you already even heard of, the list goes on and on and on. I can use The Wave, the movie that we saw earlier this year, as an example. I can use myself. A number of years ago, about 3-4 years ago, I left Yeshiva at around 3 o'clock. I took a 21 bus to the bus station. And about a block and a half away, there was a big explosion. There was a bomb off. As I'm saying it now, I'm getting the chills. You have to be there to experience it. People running everywhere, a lot of smoke. And as I get closer, I didn't realize what happened at the time, as I get closer to the scene, there's a lot of blood, there's a people are hurt. And even though I was completely safe, I was not hurt at all, I actually went into shock. So as I'm feeling part of the, as I'm saying it over to you, I'm feeling the same emotions right now. And again, it's situational attribution. That the situation that you're in causes you to behave certain ways. Most people, when they get off the bus, they're totally okay. The situation, again, causes us to act in a certain way. I would like to suggest for the next 20 minutes or so that we really are a product of the situation that we're in. Sometimes the situation that we're in can have a tremendous, positive, and very powerful, meaningful effect on our lives. And sometimes the situation that we're in can be very negative. The one thing that I did not mention to you is that I believe that in order to get out of the behavior that we normally feel, you have to have a focus. In the experiment that I quoted to you before, two people asked to leave the study on the first day because they realized that what they were doing was wrong. So they left right away and they were not part of the situation they were in. Frankl himself writes in his book that the times when he felt more human was the times when he remembered his wife, when he remembered his family, and therefore that gave him a focus. And I say about myself as well, when I realized, when I got home that night, even though for 3 days I was going through nightmares and I was in total shock, when I was able to focus in and how appreciative I was to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for everything that I had, that was my focus. During those times, somehow, psychologically, physiologically, I was able to get out of that moment and I was able to live a regular life. Today's discussion is going to be about how do we handle Ben Azmanim? How do we handle the situation that we're about to encounter, which is very different than the situation that we're in now? This week's Parsha tells us, Neged Tzaraat Ki Tiyeh Ba'adam, if a person finds Tzaraat on his body, V'uvayla Kohen, you have to go bring it to the Kohen. The Kohen is the expert, the Kohen is the professional. He'll check out your body, he'll check out the nega that's on your flesh, and he'll tell you, yes, it's leprosy, it's Tzaraat, it's not Tzaraat. And we find in Masechet Negaim, it says, Kol HaNegaim, all the afflictions, Adam Ro'eh Chutz Minega Atzmo. A person has the ability to see all the afflictions himself, except for one type of affliction. That's the nega, the affliction that he has on his own body. When you have it on your own body, you can't judge it. You can't evaluate it. Your nose will be so mechan you. And this halacha applies to a Kohen. Therefore, the halacha is, a Kohen himself gets a nega, a Kohen himself gets an affliction, Rabosai. A Kohen is not allowed to determine for himself whether it's Tzaraat or not. He has to bring his own nega himself to another Kohen. That's the halacha. Says Rav Naaman on this idea that a person is always, always has a nature to see the fault in other people. That's who we are, that's who we're created. We're very good at criticizing. We're very good at seeing what's wrong with other things. However, when it comes to looking at ourselves, we become very defensive. And this applies not only to students, it applies to rabbeim, it applies to members of the Hanhala, it applies to presidents, congressmen, so on and so forth. So on the one hand, the message that Rav Naaman is telling us is that we really are not good on checking on ourselves. However, if we put ourselves in a situation where people are checking on us, then we'll be fine. Take the situation of Yeshiva, for example. If we're in a situation where there's a lot of learning that takes place, then we're part of a structure. So if I'm coming to davening, people will know it. What the follow-up is, that's a different story. But people will know it. If I'm missing from Seder, my Chavrusa is going to know it. There's an automatic check-in. My Rebbe is going to know it. So on and so forth. So being part of this yeshiva environment is very good. And there's no question that the tremendous positive effect of being in a positive situation is great. Why? And we all feel it. By now, every single person in this room should feel it. When you walk in to this institution in the month of August, I can honestly say that nobody was really ready to learn at 10 o'clock at night. without buttoning it off. No one was really ready to take on another hour, another 2 hours. Was really ready, ben hazman, in the middle of the afternoon, ben hazarim, to pound. If you look today at what's going on in the yeshiva, it's amazing. Plenty of guys have chavrusas in the afternoon. Plenty of guys are learning over. Plenty of guys are not buttoning as much. And it's not just with the learning. Look at people the way that they daven, look at the people the way that they act with one another. There's a certain maturity that took place. It's a tremendous, very powerful, positive experience. And when you have that type of experience, you can fulfill your human potential. Asks the Shemesh Shmuel in this week's Parsha on a Rashi. A Rashi, the Bezrat Hashem we're all familiar with because it's the first Rashi. It says Rashi in this week's Parsha. Why is it that we begin with Ishaki Tezriya Ve'adat Har, the birth of man? It says Rashi the following. It says, Amra Shmulai Kishem Yitzarato Shel Adam Achar Kol Be'ema Chaya Ve'of B'maseh Bereshit. Just like man himself was created when? On the sixth day, after all the other creatures were already created. So too, the Torah of man, what we're about to do now, the Tzarah, so on and so forth, so that too is going to be explained after what? After the Torah of Behema. What do we have last week? Which animals kosher, animals not kosher. So it makes sense. Just like in Masa Bereshit, you have the creations of the animals and the creation of man. So too here, you have the Torah, the laws of the animals, where you're allowed to eat, but then you have the Torah of man, the Tzaraas that he has, so on and so forth. Great. Ask the Shemesh Shmuel an unbelievable question. Really? Is that Rashi? Really? Is that so? What's all of Sefer Bereishit and Shmur about? That's all about man. It's all about story. It's all about leaders. It's all about what you're supposed to learn from our avos. Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. From our Imaot, from Moshe, David. That's all about man. And therefore, what follows? First, you have the story of Dan, and then you have the story of Korbanos. Rashi got it wrong. It's the wrong way. First man, then animals. Now look what you said. Says the Shemesh Shmuel, an interesting word. He goes, you know what? In Masa Bereshit, on the first day, the nefesh of the person was created. But his guf was only created after the entire creations of the animals. So first you have the first day where the nefesh was created, then you have the creations of all the animals, and then on the last day you have the creations of the group of man to put together, we have the world. For the Shemesh Shmuel, the same is true here. First you have man being created. What's the nefesh of man? The nefesh of man is the Bereishit and Shmur. It's about leading, it's about Meshach, it's about Hamasakot, it's about Moshe Rabbeinu, reaching out to other mankind. That's the nefesh, that's the sikhli, that's the koach, that's the emotion. Then you have what? The parshis of the animals. That's what we just learned. And now, you have information about the growth. So it follows very true. However, the Shemesh Shmuel points out, if man cannot act based on the potential of his nefesh, if man, the human being, cannot act out based on his midosh, on his sikhli, as an intellect, and his emotion, then man is almost similar to animals. You have animals, and then you have man. And that's a fine message that Shemesh Shmuel brings out.
If we don't maximize our potential as human beings, then what are we? We're almost like animals. Share this thought with Rabbi Turetsky at Chalvin, and he told me that I should mention the following Mesil Tishai. In the second section of Mesil Tishar, I'm talking about Midat HaZirut, says the Ramchal the following thing. A person has to be careful with his ma'asim, with his actions. How do you do that? You figure out, you make an assessment, you make an evaluation. What are you doing? Are you doing correctly? What are you not doing? Listen to the following thing. When a person has the knowledge of how he should act, how is it conceivable that a person will not act in that way? And then he explained by me to you, if a person knows what he should be doing and simply closes his eyes to reality and chooses to act in a different way, says
You're even less than animals. Even less, that's what he says. Less than animals. Meaning what? What's the message? Kadosh Baruch gives us a gift. Kadosh Baruch creates us with minds, with the freedom of thinking, with understanding ourselves. But if we're not able to follow up on our own intellect, if we can't make decisions about ourselves, we can't make proper, appropriate actions to take for ourselves, then what are we doing? We're only acting based on the situation. We're robots. We're about to leave yeshiva. And in leaving yeshiva, we all agree that the situation which we are about to face is very, very different than the situation here in yeshiva. I was recently in America, and I can tell you that the culture of America is different than the culture that we experience here. I'm not saying bad, I'm not saying good. It's different. And you have to think through, as individuals who are very concerned about it, you have to think through, what have I done? What have I achieved so far in yeshiva? What have I done? And do I want to continue any of it? Do I have the intellect? Do I have the emotion? Do I have the inspiration? Are these the things that I'm about to continue? Or when I face whatever I'm about to face in a week from now, am I just going to be a robot in the situation around me? That's exactly the point I want to address today. We're about to experience Pesach. And then many Mefarshim will explain the reasons why we have four kosot. The language says Bereshit Rabbah that the Lashon of Kos is used four times in the Pasuk. By Sarmash. The Kos Paro V'yadi El Kos Paro by Tata Danabi V'shchatatam El Kos Paro V'yaten et Kos And later on, in Atat, just like there are four mentions of Kosos in Bereshit by Yosef, so too, that's symbolic of the four Kosos that we have in Yosef. What's the question? What's the connection? What does Yosef have anything to do with Pesach? What's the connection? Here we are, we're celebrating the Galut, the Geula. We're coming out of Galus. What's the connection? I'm drinking four kosos. What's the connection? To know the answer to the question, you have to know who Yosef was. And you have to know what's a little bit about Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was the lowliest of the lowest. Chazal tell us, we should point that fellow to Mitzrayim. That was Mitzrayim. Terrible place. Evil to happen, things that happen there. Mamish, a tumor. And who was Yosef? Yosef was Ani Yosef. Not Ani Ish Mitzri Yosef, Ani Yosef. Even among all the tumor that happened in Mitzrayim and among all the situations that he could have embarked upon, he always remained Yosef Atzadi. Ani! I! Ani Yosef. Ani Yosef. And maybe that's the message to us. The message to us has to be, who are we? And I'm not here to preach who you are. I can't tell you who you are. Because I really don't know if the actions, the behaviors I see every day are situational or are predispositional. Are you the people, the products of your situation? Say you're davening, shirim, and therefore your B'nai Torah is amazing. But once the situation is replaced with something else, you become part of the situation? Or any of what we've done over the past number of months, has that at all ignited anything internal and intrinsic within you? But the message has to be, I need your safety. I have to be who I am. No matter where I go, I have to be who I am. Great story that was set over by Rav Krohn,
about a Rebbe, we'll call him Rav Schwartz. Tremendous, tremendous Talmud Chacham.
At age 18, Shas Va'Peh, Bava Yerushalmi, go! Unbelievable guy. Age 21, Rabbi of a shul, of a community, a posek, a dayan. Age 25, people will come to him from all over the world who would answer Shas. Unbelievable! Tremendous Chochmah. He got married, he had kids. Age 35, day and night, in and out. It's Osig B'Torah, Osig B'Tibur. At age 40, devastated. Kids are very worried, very concerned about him. They go to the hospital. And then they come to the room, in the hospital room. The doctor begins to nod his head back and forth. Looks down at them, nodding forth. They don't understand. They see their father laying on the bed. Why is the doctor going like this? Jewish guy, religious doctor, he says to them, but Schwartz, he'll survive the physical trauma of the stroke. He can walk, and he can talk, and he can move the physiological muscles in his body. But if you ask him any question related to halacha, Torah, Sukkim, something that is persuaded, that is kindergarten. My own kid would know, the Alpha. He can't respond. He doesn't know the answer. What do you see when you wake up in the morning? He doesn't know. This giant of Torah, in a second, he doesn't know. Kids don't know what to do, they're freaking out. Why? My father's like, how can that be? They try to work together. The neurologist comes in. Professionals come in. Finally, they figure out some strategy. Medical strategy. It's been used before. Again, I'm not sharing anything new. What's the medical strategy? There have been cases that if you're able to ignite, if you're able to remind somebody, particular memory of something that they've done, it may turn them back on to who they were. Okay. So what should we do? No, take him to a place where he could potentially remember things that he sat down together, back and forth. Take him to Cheder. Let him learn the Alephus of where he was. And maybe the Zad Hashem that he learns the Alephus, he'll come back to himself. Fine. Kids don't know. A little bit shocked. Take him to Cheder. Fine. Sure, 4 years old. Giant. We'll take him to Cheder. We'll bring him in. We'll speak to the Menahel of the same situation. The Menahel of the Tzibur Schwartz, like shaking, pulling, sweating. This is what Schwartz. He's in my favor. He's so scared. Saying, please, we're asking bigger people. Can he just sit and keep the Aleph? Let him sit and keep the Aleph. Let him hear the Talmudim sing the Aleph song. Maybe that will ignite something. You could potentially have a hand in him remembering everything that he had back.
Something else is like for Schwartz, of course. The knock on the Rebbe's door, Rebbe opened the door, sees Rav Schwartz getting shaky. Say the same to the Rebbe, can you please, Rav
Schwartz, please, can you just sit in the back of the classroom? Fine. So here he is, a giant of a person, Rav Schwartz, sitting in the back of the classroom.
And the Rebbe, Chayyar Kita Aleph, is singing to the Talmidim, Aleph, Bass, Gimel. That's good, right? Dalit. And all the Talmidim are sitting back. He's going around and spinning a little candy, like the Rambam says, the honey with sweetness. Beautiful, unbelievable, passionate, the Alef Rebbe.
And Rav Schwartz is sitting in the back, and his lips are not moving. But he's taking in.
This is a story from a prophet. You know what they do in Cheder?
I hate to shock you all, but in Cheder they also have recess. And so what the boys do in Cheder, they go to recess, they play ball. Certain time comes out, it's time for recess. They're going out, they play baseball. And Rav Schwartz is sitting in the back of the classroom. Everyone left the classroom, he's sitting in the back. All of a sudden you see the guys, little kids, trying to get together, playing ball. And you hear this one arguing, oh, what about my team? Oh, what about my team? Get the bat, get the gloves, all the noises. But Schwartz begins to stand up. He gets closer and closer to the window. He's looking outside, and he sees the boys. They're playing baseball. The both sides, and Schwartz begins to walk outside. And you know, in most baseball fields, they have a cage. Is that what you call it? The cage? So he's standing behind the cage. You know what I'm talking about, the cage? Yes? Yeah, good. You're with. So he's standing behind the cage. And I see, what is it called? That's up. Okay. Standing behind the cage. To protect him. And he sees the kids going bad. They have a swinging, some are hitting, some are missing. He hears the word strike! How am I doing, Rabbi Shnad? How am I doing? And then he goes over to a kid and he says to him, can I bat? You're short. At the same time, the children, the elderly sons, the Rebbeinu sons, of Rabbi Schwartz, come to the chair. They want to see what's going on with the father. How much alphabet does he remember? Coming to the building, what do they see? They see their father. Baseball player. He's about to take his place, his position on the mound. I don't know how to talk about it. Here's his place, coach. Schneider's giving me signs. You know, if you don't know the signs of baseball, you don't know how to do it. He's about to bat, okay? He's about to bat. And the children are nearing him. And the kid is going up for a pitch. And he's getting ready. And the children are running, And finally, before anyone pitches and he has a chance to swing, thank you very much, before he has a chance to swing out of the container, the children come over to me, pull, Tati, what are you doing? Don't you know who you are? You're Rav Schwartz, what are you doing? What are you thinking? That's how a crone ends the story. What a powerful message. But that's the message I want to send you today. What are you about to do? Do you know who you are? Are you ready for the situation you're about to face? Is there anyone in this room that can honestly say that they thought about it and that they have a focus? That they made goals? I'm going somewhere, thank you, like yeshiva. I have a goal every day, davening. I have a goal, at least 1 hour. Realistic goals, not unrealistic goals. 5 hours, chavrusa, I'm going to go. Realistic goals. Anyone in this room do that yet? Because if you haven't, what are you doing? Where are we holding yeshiva? Are you robots? You only going to learn when you come to yeshiva? Only because of sin? Because my rabbi calls me in the morning? Because Rav Ramali wakes me up in the morning? Or aren't you the most unbelievable, amazing class of 2014 that make this yeshiva so proud? And when you walk out of here in 3 days, you'll be wearing the crown that says in the Ben Torah on your neck. Have a good day.